Welcome to Art Juice. This is honest, generous and humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Alice Sheridan.
And me, Louise Fletcher.
Now my phone's pinging with notifications. Right, we're full on professional today. How professional are you feeling today?
I'm feeling, not at all professional. On a scale of 1 to 10, I'm feeling half, I would say, right, as a professional. So we apologise in advance, everybody, if this podcast isn't up to its usual stellar standard.
It was funny because we actually had some ideas for today and we both kind of rocked up and went, let's just go. So we're just going to go with it today and share what we've been working on and see where the conversation leads, because actually those are often the fun ones, aren't they? So let's launch into that. What have you been working on this week? Are you feeling non-professional because you've been doing other things and you've got the balance wrong?
I think I've got the balance a little bit wrong, but in a way that makes me happy, because I've been painting and then painting a lot. And then I came back in last night from my studio to get ready for a meeting I had with about marketing for my upcoming course. Very boring. But anyway, I went into Slack, which is the messaging software that I use with my team. And I saw there were all these messages, and there were quite a few from Jamie, my assistant. And the last one started with, I'm just going to add to this long list of messages by saying, and then I went, oh no, for the last few days, I forgot to check. So poor Jamie had been, none of them were that urgent, but people had been sending me messages, which I hadn't even seen because I've been so engrossed in what I'm doing. So I feel bad, but not bad, because I feel quite proud of myself that this focus has been where I think it should be at the moment. But also a little bit bad, because I don't like to let people down by not responding to them when they're trying to reach me. So I'm trying to be a bit more disciplined in the next few days about making sure at least once a day I check my messages to see what else is going on in the world other than my studio.
I think it's good to check things. Is there an ideal time? Because if you check things at the beginning of the day, it's so easy to get distracted and you go off and you answer people and you go down a little kind of wormhole of, oh, well, that and that and that and that. And then you never get on with what you're doing. If you check them at the end of the day, you're like, I'm ready to stop now. Like, I don't want to be doing all of that stuff now.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's an ideal.
And I've been, as well as painting, in the evenings, which is sometimes I check like maybe 4 o'clock. I'll feed my dog at a certain time, and then while he's eating, I'll sit down and check all my messages. He eats quite fast, so that's usually not, don't give me that much time. But I've been doing a bit of decorating, setting myself up a new office in the house, and that is taking up, that's quite interesting. So that's taking up time. When I've finished, I'm either decorating, I was trying to put a desk together with some help last night, and it came in 1,000 pieces. I mean, they might as well sent it as matchsticks. I've never seen so many little pieces.
Does it have drawers? Let me guess. It's got drawers, right?
It's got drawers.
Flat pack drawers. Ugh, hell on earth. You know me. I don't mind flat packs, but flat pack drawers, horrendous.
When I say I was putting a desk together with some help, I was handing screws across to the person putting the desk together. And it still only got half done in 2 hours. There was just so many pieces. But all that's very exciting, and looking for a desk lamp and finding the right desk chair and all that. It's all very exciting. So all that seemed to have been more exciting than keeping my business going. So I've got to get the balance back into where I need to be. But the painting's been, I know you've been in your studio quite a bit too. And I'm just really loving what's happening at the moment. And so I want to keep pursuing it. And this is the thing we always talk about, or I always talk to people in my group about. It takes a long time, I think, to get somewhere with an idea. It takes quite a bit of work. So you've got to put the time in. And I don't mind putting the time in, because it's all fun and exploration. But it is quite a lot of hours involved. And this is the balance that we're always talking about, trying to strike. I know you've been doing a lot of businessy things at the moment, and also getting some painting in, and just finding that balance between the two is a constant struggle.
Yeah, and I think for me as well, you know, getting more life things. So cinema, we've got another cinema visit booked this week. I made Louise go bleh, bleh, this morning because I was up and out for a run. So I've been for a run and back and showered. And like, honestly, though, that has surprised me as much as anybody else. But it feels pretty good. But it does all take time because it means that's, you know, in total another hour that hasn't been done on some of the other things. It's not easy to get all these things fitted in. It really isn't.
No, it isn't. And I've been a bad socially recently. Partly the pandemic shut everything down, and then I didn't get back into the swing of seeing people.
Yeah.
But lately I've been trying to do a better job. And in some cases, friends are a long way away, so that involves phone calls rather than visits. But you think, oh, I should ring that person. They rang me. I should ring them. But then that's going to be 2 hours probably because we've got so much to catch up on. So should I do that? And in the last few months, my answer had always been, nah, I'll do it another day or I'll. But that's another thing I've been trying to work on, is to get back into a bit more normal life. So I actually went out with two friends for a pub lunch the other day. Haven't been in a pub since. I haven't been out into a social venue since March 2020, before the lockdown.
Wow. Because
before the lockdown, I just thought, this is ridiculous. The government's not locking everything down, and they should be. So we just stopped going into pubs a few weeks before the lockdown. And then we just didn't since then. And so anyway, it was funny. It was a bit like when we came back from America after 22 years away, and it felt like I hadn't been away. It felt like I'd been on a holiday and everything just carried on. Going into the pub felt just perfectly normal, and not even like, oh, I've really missed this. It just felt like, oh, here I am back doing this. So we had a nice lunch. And then on Sunday, I've got a friend coming over and we're going to have lunch here. She's coming over. I'm going to walk the dog. Haven't seen her in ages. And I had another friend stay with me a couple of times, and he's going to come back in a few weeks and stay again. So getting a social life just up and running a little bit more. And most exciting, I've got a visitor coming from South Africa at the end of the month, because my community manager for my art tribe, Tracy, lives in South Africa, and she's on a visit to the UK. And so I said, oh, come and stay with me. So she's coming for a few days at the end of February. So life is ticking back up again. And of course, I've always got my family, so I'm seeing my mum. So that's ticking back up, and I'm trying to make the time for that. And those friendships are slowly kind of coming back and catching up and coming back to normal. So, yeah, but you've got more, because you've also got, well, you've got more of an interest in social activities than me anyway, so you'd like, that's important in your balance, more important I think for you than for me. I think I have to consciously try to make myself do it, and then I enjoy it, whereas I think you really have always wanted to be doing that, even during lockdown, haven't you?
I think it's often like things when they disappear, isn't it? And when they first disappear, or you're not doing them, you don't notice them so much because you're just getting on with other things, and then you realize what an impact it's having on you not doing it, how much it's making you shut down in other areas, or you know, lose enjoyment in things. And I know that at times that's exactly what's happened to me when, for whatever reason, I've stopped painting for a period of time. At the beginning it's fine, like you're getting on with things, and then you just get this kind of like niggling, like you know, I need to be, what's missing? And then you're, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, that's missing. And I think that interaction with other people for me is a huge part of that. So yeah, I've just for a while now, just been making a conscious effort to make sure that I get out and I do all of those things, not always with other people. Sometimes it's just getting out and being in a different environment. But yeah, I've had quite a nice week this week. I was nudged by the gallery for, please send me over complete high resolution images and titles and name of what you want to call the show in writing. And I was like, yeah. So what I did was I got everything together and I thought, well, how would I hang the, you know, if I've got to make a choice about how to hang these, which ones are complete, which ones are there. And so that was actually really nice to do. And I'm settling on a name. Again, it takes a while, doesn't it? I think so often all of those things we think, you know, you write it in your to-do list, decide name.
It seems easy when it's just two words written down.
But it takes time, and we've got to give ourselves grace when we do that, because it's something that you've got to, I mean, it's not, let's be honest, it's not the end of the world one way or another, is it?
No. No, I find that really difficult. I find all of that difficult, and I've been trying to compile images of what I'm working on and type, but I haven't. I've also struggling with titles. I've got so many pieces because it's such a big space, and I've done some small ones. So I've managed to find titles for all the 24-inch and upwards paintings, but now I've got 12-inch and 10-inch ones. I think I've got 10, 12-inch and 9, 10-inch. And it's like, oh, my God, that's 19 more titles I have to come up with. And they're not springing to mind. Often titles spring to mind for me when I'm working on them, but with these they haven't. So I've got to get them all out at some point, lay them all down. Luckily, they haven't asked me yet for, but they will soon, because they'll have to be making labels up and everything. So they're going to ask me for that soon. And I do remember at some point saying, oh, I'd really like there to be text going along the walls to kind of walk you through what you're experiencing. And now I'm thinking, yeah, and which is stuff I'm going to have to write. Why did I say that?
I think single word titles are quite nice when you've got a lot to be doing.
Yes, that's a good idea. Yeah, that's a good idea.
I go through phases with my titles where some I like them to be a little bit long and a bit more ambiguous and lead you in, tease you a little bit. And then short, punchy ones that are just single words. But all, it depends how the pieces relate to each other as well. But I think if you've got a group of small ones, that's an important part of it.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's a good idea. If all the small ones had one word titles, it would be like a common theme between them. But I always have this kind of grandiose idea, which I really believe in. I think that a title can sell a painting almost as much as the painting, maybe the same amount. I really think if it's just the right title, it can be so intriguing, exciting, interesting that it can sell the painting. I rarely achieve that actually coming up with a title that does that. But I know when I see people that do that, I think, oh, wow, you know, you are just as much selling your work because you've brilliant titles as you are because of the paintings. And I'd love that.
It's a little bit like making the work, though, isn't it? I think if you're too conscious of that, or how it's going to land with people, or forcing that, then it ends up being a little bit artificial and a bit forced. Whereas if it just comes naturally, I think you're absolutely right. And I can't think of particular one titles at the moment, but I know that I've had paintings that have sold and people have written to me afterwards and they're like, and the title is da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and it means this to me because of da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
The point is, I couldn't have predicted that. Like, I didn't pick the title because I knew it would do that. It's just like making a painting in the first place. You've just got to do it the way it is. And yeah, it's going to hit home with somebody for whatever reason that is often something that you can't predict or you can't know about in advance. Having said that, would I call my paintings something like funeral procession? Possibly not. Generally, well, not the feel I'm going for, but then maybe for some it depends people's work, if you
were, and it depends if that's what you were painting about. Yeah, I always really admire that about Tracy Emin, and particularly her drawings. There was an exhibition I saw where all the little drawings had amazing titles, because she kind of writes that they're like little poems. Mm. And the title would only be one sentence, but it would be a poem in a sentence, and it would tell you what that kind of scratchy drawing was all about. And sometimes the titles were actually written into the drawing and sometimes they were underneath, but I just thought, wow, that is a real skill to be able to do that. Because if I try to do that, these drawings in particular were about her mum dying. And so they're all about her mum. If I tried to do that, I know what happens. I go really obvious, like a really obvious thing comes to mind, like, oh, I miss you so much or something. I would, you know, it would be for me if my mum had died. Oh, I miss you. She had some, one of them was, I remember a drawing of someone watching TV and it said another Sunday afternoon without you. And yeah. I was like, oh, so it's Sunday afternoon. You've got nothing to do. So you're watching telly because you're missing this person. It tells a whole story. And I really admire that. But it just doesn't seem, I think I'd have to spend more time on it because I think you have to think of the obvious thing and then dig deeper, just the way we, like you said, just the way we do with our paintings. And perhaps I either don't have the patience or by that time I'm kind of, oh, okay, I'm done with these now and I get them titled and get them done. But it's not that I hate my titles. I'm quite pleased with some of them, but I just, it's an area I'd like to get better at, I think.
I think it's an interesting one. And I know that there are some artists, I mean, and I've done this in the past. I've had a page where I've had titles and words and phrases that have appealed to me for particular reasons. And I've kind of kept a note of them. And at the time you kind of think, oh, that would be a really good title. I can't do a painting to match a title. And sometimes it's that matching up just feels really wrong or a bit random. But it has to be something where you really sit with the work for a little bit afterwards. And I think, I'm trying to think if there are any paintings that I've got where I know that I've titled them wrong and a year later, I wish I could go back and change it.
You could if you hadn't sold it. And just change it and see what happened.
That would be a fun experiment, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it'd be a bit like change your title testing.
And you'd still never know. You'd still, and this is the crazy thing, right? You know, when you buy a painting, nobody has the title sitting underneath it when it's sitting on their wall.
No.
Why does it make such a difference?
Yeah, because it gives it that whole other layer, doesn't it? It turns it into, I think it's like two artworks. And I do have paintings where I've told people the title. I've said, oh, it's called such a thing, because that the title resonated with me so much. And I bet the person who wrote to you and said that the title was important, they probably tell people, yeah, it's called such a thing. And if it's a good title, when you tell people, they go, oh, right, wow, yeah. You know, because it also starts to mean something to them. But yes, you don't have it underneath. Maybe we should. Maybe in our house we should have a little label under each painting with the title, if it's a good one.
And I'm just thinking of the pieces that I've bought recently, or even not recently, the ones that I've got, I don't even know what they were called. I don't even know the titles. I don't remember the titles being part of my decision at all. It was just all about the image. I've never realized that titling for me as an artist creating it is a way of emotionally completing the painting, perhaps. So it is important for me, and I think, you know, the untitled 1, 2, and 3 is a cop-out, actually. Yeah, but as a buyer, I don't think I give a monkey's.
Yeah. I'm thinking of some I bought recently. Yeah, I don't know what they were called. 3 I bought from someone. I picked them because of the image and the title. So I bought 3 from the same person and she had quite a selection. And the titles were good on those. And I thought, oh, yeah. You know, I couldn't decide. And so there, the title was important because they were all good and I didn't know which one to buy. But yes, I don't always, there are some, like I say, where the title is so good that you tell people. But I think that's the thing. Most people, including myself in this, don't do an amazing job at titles to the point where we wouldn't register it or think it was important. I also think it can be really important in more representational work, particularly like landscapes, to have a title that, if you want to make sales, to have a title that includes the place name, but is more than the place name. So I just think it's disappointing if it's called, I don't know, I'm thinking of Our Moor, Elslack Moor. Okay, that's a bit boring. But something specific about that moor. Or a specific day on that moor, a specific weather, or something that someone else who was visiting the area would resonate with, or who lives here would resonate with, I think is Again, this is a very boring title, but I had a painting that sold immediately to a local person, and I had called it Summer Evening Walk to Pinhor, which is a place near us, because that's what it was to me. And it was to that person because they always do their summer evening walk there. So that sold instantly. So I think if you're thinking from a sales perspective, it can be important in that kind of work as well.
Mm. You see, I prefer to leave things more open on location because I don't want it to be tied down. And I know that in the past, people have looked at my work and they've said, oh, you know, it reminds me of XYZ place to them. Whereas if I'd called it something that was location specific, that would have limited it.
Yeah, and it's true. It's a total like one. It's a flip side of the coin, isn't it? And I think with more abstract work, I don't think I've ever put a place name in now that I make more abstract landscapes, because I think that would limit entirely.
Mm.
But when I was showing locally and the work was local, from a sales perspective, I think it really helped. I think it depends what you're trying to do, though. So if you're selling to tourists in a tourist area, I think that can make a difference because they say, oh, look, it's a painting of where we went. Let's get that one. But on the flip side, like you say, you might lose someone who wanted it to be about Devon and actually it's about Cornwall. And they say, oh, no, it's not the place we wanted it to be about. So
yeah,
it's all down to what you love and how you want to do it. And I know that personally I love titles, and I also know, I think my paintings are better than my titles at the moment. So I'd like to get them even.
It's kind of the way around you want it though, really.
Well, that's true, isn't it? Yeah.
You had to choose paintings or titles. Yeah, we'll go for the paintings.
So I know you've been doing a lot of businessy stuff, but you have been working in the studio as well. And how is the preparation coming for this exhibition?
Well, it's not like yours. It's not a huge space, so it's only four large pieces. So I've just been working, thinking, well, then I'll choose which four work together. And I think just that openness of not feeling like I've got to create a certain it's been very loose. I don't have to create a certain style. I'm just purely working, experimenting. And I was just at that stage with some of them, which was I could just keep going with these, you know, I could just keep going and going and going, and that perpetual is it finished. And I think you could keep going, and maybe some of the other ones I've got I will keep going and going, but I'm just at that stage with some of them where I look at them and I think there's something special about how it is now, so I'm not going to fuss with those. So I've got some that are real beginners, real beginning stages, big ones. So I'm just going to keep going on those, but I'm also going to turn my attention to working on some slightly smaller mid-size scale ones as well, which will feel very different. But I think after working fairly big with a number of them, it will be helpful to have a little bit of a reset on scale. And I'm just at that stage where it hasn't fully settled what I've learned from these paintings yet. You know, they're still a little bit in that fresh new stage, so that might be something that comes into the name. But it's been a good group. You know, the colors have been interesting for me, and that's something that I haven't, once I started, I think I started thinking, oh, these will be buried, but I've sort of followed that color thread and I haven't gone back to what might instinctively be my urge to subdue everything. Yeah, so it's a very different situation, I think, from yours, where you've got to create a completed body of work. I still feel like I'm in the middle of it.
Yeah.
But I just got to make choices about it now. So it's quite a different process. But yeah, it's been good.
And I think when you say that, perhaps I've rushed. Well, I love everything I've made, but because of my paranoia about being late, I've got everything. I thought I'd got everything, but I'm still making interesting things that I want to include. So I suspect that some of what I thought was a completed body of work, I'll edit out eventually because I'll have these new ones that I want to include. So I'm not actually, I thought I was calling it finished, but I'm not actually calling it finished because it's the same. It just keeps going, doesn't it? And how do you know when to stop?
Yeah. Have you got to do a catalogue and things?
Not a catalogue, but they do want, obviously, all the, I'm going to need to provide them all the images, sizes, names, titles well in advance so they can prepare all the labels. But there won't be a catalogue. It's not quite that posh, but they do need all that. And I'm imagining quite a bit in advance. So I am pretty much done, and I'm getting frames now and starting to paint frames and all of that. They're all standard size things. So I've been mainly able to buy frames from Easy Frame, where they make up the frames of the sizes you want. And then I'll do my own painting of them. So that is, I do have enough work, but I feel like, oh, this new stuff's exciting. I'd like to include some of that. Mm-hmm. And maybe I just need to draw a line under it and then let the new stuff be whatever it's going to be. But how do you know, like you said about the ones you're working on, how do you know, right, is that enough? Is that enough now? Can I stop or should I keep going? Because truthfully, we could keep going forever.
Mm-hmm.
Like we could just keep going. And there's on a painting and on a series of work, you could always find another question to ask. You could always find another thing to add. At some point, it's got to be done. But I was interested hearing you speak the other day. I think it was on one of your membership conversations you were having. You said that there were some that you were like, yeah, I think they're done, but I could keep going.
Mm.
That is such a challenging point to get to. And when that happens, how are you making the decision that, yes, that one I need to keep going on, but that one I'm calling done?
I think because I've got experience of some in the past now where I kept going because I thought it wasn't enough. And when I looked back, I think, oh, I just wish I'd stopped. And so there's a freshness to some of it that I don't want to lose by adding too much and making it too complex. And I think the balance that I've been trying to work with on these is exactly that, is I want there to be a spontaneity and a freshness to them rather than feeling like they're heavily worked. But I want that to be done in quite a subtle way. So it's involved building up quite a lot of layering, but very, very, almost very thin layers. And that it's hard to see visually that there have been big steps and big changes in it. Because some of the obvious markers of the painting haven't necessarily changed a huge amount. And that's quite different for me. I think I'm quite used to like in a big moves, change this or, but actually when I look back at how they were early and where I've got to now, there is a degree of complexity in them, which I've never achieved before by painting in this way.
Mm.
And so I think I just have to be very careful not to just kind of bulldoze over that and wreck it. And, you know, honestly, I don't know if it's enough, but the only way that I decide is it enough for me at the moment? And when I got them all out the other day and I got them all. So one of the things I really miss about having the lovely big messy studio is the ability to take paintings out, put them in my home, check, see how they feel, because they're in the studio, they're in the space where you've been working on them. You've got all your paraphernalia and all the clutter around. You can't see them clearly. So I actually got them out in the hallway of the building and lined them all up all the way. So everybody coming in and walking down the corridor to go to the loo, you know, it's like, oh, you know, some people stop and some people kind of roll their eyes and all of that. But it was really helpful to be able to do that, and it did mean that I could look at them with a degree of clarity and go, yeah, I'm happy with that, you know, it's got to where it is and I like it, and I'm not looking at it going you know. And there are a couple that I'm looking at and I'm going, not that I don't love them as much, there's one that I think is finished, I'm just not as emotionally connected to it. So that's not one of the ones that I'm putting forward. I'll keep that. And actually, that is currently sitting alongside a slightly larger one. And I think it's going to help inform that one. So, you know, every painting has a purpose.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah. And I think that it's just giving yourself the time to recognize that, you know, where does this painting fit in your story of you making your work?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I've used that same criteria of like, is there something bugging me that I know it's not finished? I've noticed I have two different types of feeling that something's bugging me. The first is that's bugging me, it's not finished, and I know it's not. The second is that's bugging me because it feels a bit too vulnerable. But actually, I'm going to leave it because I do really like it. And even though that it might be, for example, a compositional thing, which is not quite in the right place, and maybe that's not an ideal composition, but I like it. But I'm just going to leave it because it's not niggling me in the sense that, you know, you haven't finished, you know, you're just trying to rush. There's this other thing, which is like, yeah, it's probably done. And then you come back and you go, no, it's not. It's not interesting enough. Usually that's it for me. It's not interesting enough to me. So I'm not going to, and it doesn't matter how many people tell you, oh, it's finished, leave it. It's like, no, but it's not interesting enough to me. There's a painting behind you, which I've loved all along. I loved it when I came to your house. You don't love it in the same way. So it can't be done. Yeah, pack it up and send it to me. But it can't be done because you don't love it. So that's it.
You know, I'd chop little bits of it out. But it's really interesting. This painting is from 3 years ago, 4 years ago, maybe a long time. And I can see now in this painting things that are now, 3 years later, informing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And that's almost what we're talking about here, is there's a reason why this never finished. Like, I never felt it was finished. And maybe I just still need to have it hanging around to remind me of the things that I was starting to explore then, that only now, 3 years later, are beginning to come to some kind of, it's not even a culmination yet, because I feel like I'm only just beginning it.
Yeah. But this is what we were saying at the beginning. Yeah. It taking time. And when people say, oh, I'm trying to do this, I've been doing it for a few weeks, it's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
That's nothing. And there's, you're right, there's so much that shows up later in sketchbooks, in old unfinished paintings. Some of my unfinished paintings, I tidied up the studio a few weeks ago. Some of them, there's nothing in them for me. It's like, I don't like anything about that. And if I can't paint over it, it needs to go in the bonfire. But a lot of the older stuff, there's maybe, no, I don't like it, but I can see how I had started to incorporate, for example, using collage to make textures. And then I'd done it for a bit and then I'd gone away from it again. And now I'm doing it in a much more developed and planned way, where I'm thinking, okay, if I layer that piece over that piece, three layers later, that's going to create an interesting effect when I sand it back. I couldn't have done that back at the beginning, but I couldn't have got to where I am now without that beginning stage. So it's just always knowing. And then 3 years from now, either there won't be any collage anymore, or I'll be using it in a far more sophisticated and knowledgeable way than I am now, hopefully, because that's what we keep doing if we keep working.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just that trust in the journey, isn't it? Well, there we go. That got somewhere quite interesting, I think. Helped me formulate a few thoughts. Right. We have a question here from Kerry, who sent us in a question about pricing. So that's actually probably quite appropriate to talk about today, with just this idea of finishing work and titling work. So she says she's been selling her work for a year or so with collectors who've bought several pieces and gathering interest now from galleries and getting work accepted. My pricing, however, is total guesswork, and I have no idea about the hours worked on each piece. My confidence is growing and I feel that I need to charge considerably more in order to be able to give up at least one of my part-time jobs and fit in the art admin postage tasks. But judging the prices is baffling me. I don't want my collectors to faint in shock. How much can I change them at each stage?
I have a bit of a controversial opinion about this.
One,
I think you should just change them to what you think they're worth. And if it's a giant jump and your collectors are faint in shock, they'll have to faint in shock and you'll have to get new collectors. Because we often hear we should raise them incrementally. And I think that's a good idea when we're at the right price level to begin with, mm-hmm. then incremental increases make sense. But I was in that situation and it was actually you saying to me one time, these small ones should be at least this much and they're way below that. And I just thought, yeah, okay. So I made them that much and it didn't affect my sales in the slightest. You know, they still sold. And I felt a lot better.
Yeah.
I used to feel I underpriced things awfully at the beginning because I have my own lack of confidence. And then I'd have a slight bad taste in my mouth when they sold. Like, yeah, but it was worth more than that. Yeah, you know, you gave me £900 for a meter square painting. It was worth more than that. It took me weeks, months to make that painting, and now it's £900 and it's gone. I feel better about where I am now, but I want to increase again, and I'm not going to do it in increments. I'm going to do it to where I feel like, I think it's something you said once in Connected Artists, where do I feel good when I sell it? Like, where do I feel, yeah, that feels like a good exchange of value. I feel happy with what I got.
Yeah. I think I'm in the same place with mine, interestingly, you know, and it changes. And part of it is if you make a price that is too high and you think your work is not worth that, one of the questions is, well, how would you make it worth that? You know, what would it take? What would it mean for you? What would a painting that was worth that amount look like in your life so that you could stand behind it happily and say, yeah, that is worth every penny of that price? And I think so this element of I feel my confidence in my work is growing and I need to charge considerably more. The answer to that then is you do. You know, you do need to charge considerably more. I have never worked out prices of paintings based on hours worked, A, because it is impossible to keep track of an hour's worked on a piece. And it's not how we're in a realm. That's not how we value things.
No. I was having a conversation with some people know Gabriel Lipper, fine artist from the West Coast of America. We were in a conversation and he was reminding me about a course we took, not related to art. It was about courses. And someone asked, I'm teaching a course, not about art. I'm teaching a course about, I don't know, accounting. And I charge $500 for it. And I'd like to get it to $1,500. How do I do that? And the guy teaching the course, a guy called Jeff Walker, said, put a one in front of it. Mm. That's how you do it. And he said, I'm not being glib. It's worth what you say it's worth. Put a one in front of it if you want it to be $1,500. And I also agree with your point there and make sure it's worth $1,500.
Yeah.
But the point he was making is value is in your head. The value is whatever you decide it is. And I think that's even more so with paintings. I just looked up an artist the other day whose work I like. And I was a bit put off because the prices were really low. And I was just interested in my own reaction of, oh, I didn't think, oh, good, that's a bargain. I thought, that. Mm-hmm. And subconsciously going through my mind was, I wonder if when you get up close to them, they're not that great because I'm only seeing them online.
Yeah. So here's the question, I think, and it does go back to what do you have to do to make it worth it? Like I've bought a couple of things online recently that I thought would be a good, and when I got them, I don't mean physical products. I mean, in terms of like your course issue, because I've seen that advice given to people. And then when I see what I get for it, I'm like,
yeah, well, it's
not
to be
good.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit, and am I therefore going to buy something, anything from that person ever again? Probably not. So I think it's important that wherever you are with your pricing, it is a genuinely fair exchange in terms of what you're giving, you know. Things like the quality of the materials that you've used is important. You can't just kind of whack a big price on it if you've got like really crummy thin canvas and it's a bit twisted because it's not very good stretcher bars. And I think we do see that sometimes. I think I see that at some of perhaps the art fairs where artists just think, oh, I can just do a great big painting and I'll just, you know, make it £2,000 and, you know, therefore it's going to be good. Don't like that way either.
But I think there's a mindset that comes along, and I agree with you, but I think there's a mindset with a lot of artists, particularly female artists, where they incredibly undervalue what they do.
Yeah.
And they could stick a one in front of it and it would still be worth what they're charging. And sometimes we need an outside person to tell us that, because you were not the only person who told me. Someone else I was doing an interview with said, oh, how much is that big painting behind you? And I said, you know, whatever it was. And he said, well, that's ridiculous. It should be at least twice that. And before we got off the call, he said, are you going to promise me that painting is going to be twice that amount of money when you put it for sale? Because that's ridiculous. Having someone else tell you and point out to you, I think, can be really helpful. Mm. Because if your friends, yeah, if they look at you and say, artist colleagues, they say £1,500 for that, really? Like, then you know, oh, maybe I've overpriced. And I have seen people overprice, but I've more seen people underprice.
Mm-hmm. I think it's difficult to come back from if you overprice, and perhaps that's where the advice to go incrementally is. So you're kind of establishing a benchmark, but you know, Kerry sounds like she's got that. And I think you can go, as you say, in larger jumps when you've reached a particular point. One thing that I think is important to mention at this stage, which is often as our work develops, we tend to scale up our work. So what can happen is if you're feeling like you're underpricing your work, but you're still working quite small, if you're not careful, what can happen is that you bump up the prices on those smaller ones and then you work big, and your big ones, all of a sudden you think, well, they need to be £8,000 then.
Yeah. Like,
fuck, that feels too much at the moment. So I always advise people, and we've got a kind of calculator thing that we use, you know, look at where you are now with your work and also where it might go in the future in terms of size and scale, and play around with that so that you're giving yourself potential to grow, not only with your prices to grow in the future, but also as your work changes and you work in different scales and different formats, that you're not massively overpricing yourself out of that potential area of work that you haven't really even started on yet. Because often when we begin painting, you know, most people start off work at a fairly manageable, smallish scale, but ultimately they will be wanting to make something bigger. Of course, it's not always based purely on size. That would be a crazy thing, but I think it's just worth bearing in mind at the beginning.
Yeah. And Kerry brought up that she might work just as long on a small one and as on a big one, which I think is very true for all of us. In fact, I think I might work longer sometimes on small ones. But like you said, we can't set the price based on, we can do whatever we want, but I don't think it makes sense to set a price based on our hours put into it. Because from the perspective of a purchaser, if I'm buying a painting for my house and I'm getting something that covers the whole living room wall, I'm going to expect that to be a lot more money than the one that fills a small space. And I'm, you know, generally not going to be willing to spend the same amount on those two things. That's just the way we are in life and what we would expect. So it's got nothing to do with the hours we put into it, I don't think.
Yeah. So have a little check. I mean, one rule of thumb that people often advise is to, you know, price by square inching. I'm not as keen on that. I tend to work on linear dimensions. That for me gets that ratio feeling a little bit better where I am, but there is no short answer to this. You've actually just got to sit and work it all out, but feel where you are, just in terms of what feels right now, and also bearing in mind where you want to go to. Give yourself that space to growth, and that's how I do it. We do have a calculator in the membership, but I can't describe it online. Can't describe a spreadsheet that works like magic. Put the numbers in and the numbers come out.
But it's basically linear, just thinking about linear inches. Yeah. If it's 10 inches by 10 inches, it's this much. And therefore, yeah, if it's then 12 inches by 12 inches, what does that get to?
Yeah.
And just coming up with a set of prices that feel, yeah, right to you.
And if you do a search for linear or square inch pricing, you'll get things out there. But the other thing that you mentioned is, you know, incorporating this allowance for commission, for framing, making sure you're also including your framing costs, particularly if that's selling through galleries. You want to make sure that your framing cost is covered because you're only getting 50% of the selling price normally. So you've got to work out how you're going to add your framing to that too.
I just want to answer one extra bit of this question, which was about, is it okay to ask a gallery for help, or whether that looks unprofessional? And I don't think personally there's anything wrong with being honest with people and saying, I think you should go to a gallery with an idea of your own pricing. But I don't think there's anything wrong with saying to a gallery owner, this is where my pricing is currently. How do you feel about that? Because they're going to tell you if they don't think it's enough, because they have to take their share of what you sell. Or if they think it's too much and they don't think they can sell it, they're going to tell you. And from my limited dealings with gallery owners, they have opinions about prices and they're not afraid to share them with you. So I don't think there's anything unprofessional. I think it's different from saying, I really don't know what to do. What do you think? That would seem a bit unprofessional. Mm. But here's where my pricing has been for my current market, and here's what I'm thinking of. What do you think? I don't think that's unprofessional.
Yeah. Yeah. Good call. Thank you, Kerry. And I hope that was helpful. So let's go with a quick what's inspired then. So I am just going to recommend, because when I was photographing these works, I noticed that the camera, the iPhone camera, wasn't really getting the colours exactly as I wanted them to be. It was sort of over-exaggerating the contrasts, and because they're quite subtle, wasn't picking it up. And it worked much better using an app that I have got, but that I haven't... I don't use it as a default for everything, but in this case, it worked much better, and it's called Pro Camera. So that's my what's inspired. Very helpful.
Does it just work with, once it's installed, it works within the camera app on your phone, or do you?
No, it's its own app. So you tap on that and take the photograph through that.
Oh, okay.
But I think I don't know if it's an operating system issue or whether it's an iPhone issue, but I've just noticed that with the more recent iPhones or iPhone updates, they kind of blow the contrast up a little bit too much, which for kind of everyday photos looks really cool. But when you're taking photographs of your work and you want to make sure you get that subtlety in there as well,
yeah,
having another thing has helped.
What's it called? Just say it again.
Pro Camera.
Because I have to put it in the notes. So for everybody listening, we'll have a link to that in the show notes. I have just a quick fun one. It's not art related at all, and I feel it's a bit guilty pleasure-ish, but if anybody wants a new podcast to listen to, and I'm sorry that it is new, so there's only 6 episodes so far, I think, but it is genius, and it's called Normal Gossip. And it's basically the presenter, I can't even find her name, but anyway, she gets a different guest in every week, and she tells them a story of gossip, which is not of people she knows. It's of people that she knows sixthand, or people who've written in and told about some people. And it's all anonymized so that you can't tell who they are. But one episode was about a knitting circle and a really bossy leader of the knitting circle. And my favorite to start with is episode 5, which is about a sorority and in America, and they were all fighting over who got married first, and bitching about who got engaged and whether it was a good partner for them and all of this stuff. Absolutely hilarious. And because it's all anonymized and these people, you don't know who they are, it's like gossip but without the guilty feeling of being nasty about people.
What's it called? Gossip Circle?
It's called Normal Gossip.
Normal Gossip. It's Gossip Circle new. Would be a good title though, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
Normal,
yeah.
Gossip.
It's brand new, but I highly recommend it. Good fun.
Okay, that sounds fun. I've got a good thing that I want to recommend, but I'm going to wait for a bit because until I listen to it a little bit more. So you're going to have to be patient on that one.
Oh, that's left us hanging now.
Next week. There's always next week. There's always next week. So we'll see you next week. And that's it for us today. And have a lovely day creating wherever you are. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Welcome back to Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Alice Sheridan. She turned her mic off. Hang on.
And me, Louise Fletcher.
Okay, now we started watching The Responder, which is not that cheerful, but we did play Spot Alice's Prince in the background again.
Oh, were they in there?
Yeah, they were.
Oh, wow. That's brilliant.
Quite funny.